Listen, I love podcasting. Who doesn't? The process is great until you get to the part where you have to edit and distribute your podcast. It's time-consuming, and we all love convenience. Well, here's the most convenient option possible. It's called Anchor. There's creation tools in the app that will allow you to record and edit right from your phone, tablet, or computer. It will distribute your podcast for you on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and other popular platforms. You can make money from your podcast with minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go to the free Anchor app or anchor.fm right now to get started. And trust me, you won't regret it.
They have some things to figure out as far as shooting and spacing the floor. And then Westbrook, of course. Westbrook can't hit the broadside of a barn right now, which doesn't help their cause. Welcome back, everybody, to the Business Casual Basketball Podcast. This is Aaron Washington back on the mic. Appreciate you joining us here for whatever time of day may be for you. Always happy to have you. Today is going to be a great podcast because we have a lot of great topics to talk about and maybe a little bit of controversy mixed in here towards the end as well. So I am joined on this podcast by Jacob Goldstein, analytics extraordinaire. If you need some numbers broken down, he's your guy. You know, he's on a ton of sites doing great work as always. So Jacob, thanks for joining the pod. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
Oh, great, man. Just great. This has been an awesome season so far. There's a lot of intriguing storylines as always. And the playoff race is really competitive in both conferences. The East is a little more top heavy and the West is just a dogfight all the way around. So as we approach the halfway point, I thought it'd be a good idea to kind of take a look around and see which teams we think are for real that can really go the distance in the playoffs, and then throw out a few other ones that look like they might be fool's gold. We're not sure how far they can go. So let's take a look at the Eastern Conference first, because the East is just, it's crazy here at the top. There's a lot of great teams. So, you know, starting with the top seed right now, Milwaukee Bucks, you know, they had a great performance the other night against Houston. They did a lot of great things. You know, I was kind of skeptical on them going into this season. I wasn't even sure they'd get to 50 wins. I was thinking maybe barely 50, but they've blown that out of the water. They're just on their way to great things this season. So what would you say about the, to get things started here, about the Milwaukee Bucks' chances of really making this season one to remember, not just kind of flaming out and being remembered as only a regular season team?
I mean, I think they're probably pretty high. They're right up there with Raptors, Celtics for the likely team from the East in the finals. I think they've perfectly built around Giannis. Brooke Lopez has become a ridiculous shooter, which really helps, but just everywhere on the court, there is shooting around Giannis, which is exactly what you need to do when he himself is limited in that respect. Giannis is destroyed just everything in the paint, too. If my memory serves, he's leading the league in unassisted dunks by a decent amount, like maybe even beating out some teams.
Wow.
So I think there's the basis there for a very good playoff team. I share the similar concerns that others have with, you know, what happens when it's in a playoff series and everyone is scheming for Giannis to get the ball out of his hands. But Malcolm Brogdon has been on fire this year. Chris Middleton, Eric Bledsoe is having a resurgent season. So I think there's enough surrounding talent around Giannis that even if a team is really locking in on him, making him pass the ball, trying to close the paint, there's enough there where they could still beat that scheme if things go their way because of the other creators on the team, right, which I think is ideal because teams are going to try and take away Giannis. The issue is then, is that really enough when there's three other guys on the court who are good ball handlers and then Brooke Lopez standing 35 feet away from the hoop ready to shoot a three at a moment's notice?
Yeah, I think going off of that, that made me think of Malcolm Brogdon. I think he's the X factor for them. If he has a night, or he's having nights in the playoffs like he did against Houston, where he had 24 points, and he's getting to the rim at will just about, You know, it really kind of just changes the entire dynamic of the court if you have to play Brogdon that way. You know, you have to really pay attention to him. And then Bledsoe, as you mentioned before, you know, those guys, you know, as you said, it just opened up so much for Giannis. And, you know, I'm really intrigued to see, you know, how these guys do, you know, overall, you know, especially Brogdon. I think he's had a wonderful season. And, you know, the wild thing is, you know, I looked at his stats here on Clean the Glass and in Basketball Reference. He's just so efficient. That's the thing about him. And I think one of the main reasons of that is just because he spent so much time developing his game. You know, he wasn't a one-and-done guy. He didn't play one season, just kind of call it quits. He's an older player. You know, he is 26 this season, but, I mean, you can see just over, you know, two seasons prior to this that he's really put the work in. And, you know, he's hard to stop, really. As a role player, you know, you can't do much better than Malcolm Brogdon kind of being out there torching guys in the paint and from three. You can get it anywhere.
For sure. And I think one thing that's kind of gone under the radar is just how much better, at least statistically, the Bucks have been than everyone else this season. Like, if you're just looking at net rating, there's no one, depending on where you look, obviously all the different sites have their own version of net rating, but there's no one really within at least 2 points per 100 possessions of them.
Yeah.
And some sites have it as three. If we look at luck-adjusted net ratings, it's more like five.
Wow.
So they've been incredibly dominant this season. And even if you do think teams are going to be able to scheme out Giannis, as you were saying, Brogdon is there. He's probably being guarded by the opponent's third or fourth best defender because they have to guard Middleton with their second best, and someone has to guard Bledsoe. So there's enough talent around them that they're able to beat their assignments as they sort of cascade down. And it's really shown this year. They are a dominant regular season team so far. And even if that drops off in the playoffs a little, which I would probably expect it to just a little bit, there's still enough other talent around them that it's going to be hard to stop them on any given night, because Bledsoe could go off. Middleton is always a threat to go off if he remembers, like, not to take bad shots. And Brogdon against the Rockets is a perfect example. He's a great straight-line driver. He's very crafty around the rim. So there's enough there that it is a lot of pieces to try to balance how you stop them at the same time.
Right. And I guess maybe one small, like, weakness, I guess you can say, for the Bucks, something that will be exploited in the playoffs, I'm almost certain that teams are going to pick up on this, is the quantity of three-point shots they allow. It's just a product of the defense they play. And I'm sure you've seen it just watching Brook Lopez, the way he plays the pick and roll. He drops pretty far down, just about into the paint when guarding the pick and roll, and that opens up a lot of shots on the perimeter for the opposing team. And, you know, they've gotten hurt by that on a few occasions. It does come back to bite them, you know. But, I mean, they're still second in defensive rating, you know, off of going off of Basketball Reference numbers. So, you know, obviously it's not hurting them too much, you know, if they're still second in that regard. But it's something to keep an eye on, and something they might want to adjust slightly as the playoffs come around, since teams will know to look for the three immediately off the screen. But in any case, the Bucks are set up pretty well for success, and they're taking care of business not only against the great teams, but the bad teams, which I think is a great quality of a potentially championship team, you know, taking care of business where you're supposed to.
I agree. And one comment on their high number of threes allowed, they are the most per 100 possessions of any team. But in terms of the percent that are from the corners, they're about average. So at least the three-point shots they're giving up are, you know, theoretically a little bit lower value overall than the ones from the corners, which is a good sign. I mean, obviously you don't want to lead the league in three-point attempts allowed, but at least the ones they're allowing, they're kind of forcing to above the key and in a slightly harder location.
Right. That's a great point. You know, the corner three is, you know, quite possibly the best shot in basketball. You're thinking about the added value of a three-pointer and then the closer distance from corner. You know, that's why, you know, so many people just covered that shot. You know, PJ Tucker, you know, that's his spot. You know, that's where he makes his money. So, I mean, everybody's seeking out that shot wherever they can. You know, of course, another big challenger here in the East is Toronto. They're only half a game out of first place, so it's not like they're, you know, too far behind Milwaukee or anything. You know, they're another one of those teams that's top 10 in offensive and defensive efficiency. You know, but one question I do have about them is Kyle Lowry here. He's been struggling a little bit with a sore back. He's had some injections there to help with the stiffness. This is got me a little bit worried. He hasn't played, and you know, I was reading a recent article here on The Athletic, and you know, Kyle Lowry is one of the best pick and roll scorers, or just pick and roll players in general in the league, and he's not going to be able to sustain those numbers with a bad back, and that could have a domino effect on the rest of the team here. You know, offense, defense, everything really, because you know, your back is a part of everything you do. You know, I'm just a little bit worried about that. I mean, other than that, they're a great team. They have a lot of things going for them. But I would say, you know, initially, just looking at their team as a whole, that's one thing to keep your eye on. But if he is healthy, I think the Toronto has a greater chance as anybody just because of their depth and their balance that they have, similar to Milwaukee out there.
Yeah, I would agree, especially on, you know, Lowry's health. He hasn't entirely looked himself recently, obviously. He had a really great start to the season in terms of his passing and showing that he's doing a really good job playing off Kawhi's gravity to create plays for others and for himself. But he's kind of tailed off since the injury started hitting him. He's not shooting great from three this year, but I'm not too worried about that just because he has such a large sample of, in his career of being a good shooter. So even if he ends up being more average overall this season in terms of shooting, I still think that's probably enough for the Raptors, considering he's not going to be the central focus for the team. I would say their defense is really good when they lock in.
Mm-hmm.
They have enough switchable perimeter defenders between Danny Green, Kawhi, Lowry, if he's healthy, can do it. OG Anunoby's good at it. Ibaka can switch a bit. I'm sure I'm forgetting some also. Oh, Van Fleet. They have enough perimeter switchers and even rim protectors who can switch out in Ibaka that I think their defense in the playoffs could be really good, even if they haven't shown that quite yet this season. They've sort of struggled to maintain focus at times, and maybe that's partly due to all the injuries they've gone through, because like they're playing Greg Monroe regular minutes right now, which obviously wouldn't happen in the playoffs.
Right.
So there's some hope for them on the defensive end, I think, just because of their personnel and what they've shown when they're really locked in. But it is a little bit concerning for me, especially how many health issues they've had on their more injury risk players, specifically Kyle Lowry. But I mean, when you look at the team, there's so much top-end talent to go around. Kawhi Leonard is an MVP candidate. Kyle Lowry, if he can be healthy, is one of the top point guards in the league. Danny Green is having a resurgent year. Fred VanVleet is one of the best backup point guards in the league. So Ibaka's shooting crazily. Valanciunas has really embraced his bench role. I mean, there's enough there that I think they're going to I think they're a little bit more dangerous than the Bucks at this point in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, there are a few more questions, I feel like, with the Raptors than the Bucks.
I would agree with that, Jacob. You know, another quote that, or I guess a quote here from The Athletic that I remember reading is, somebody said, I think it was one of the executives that were interviewed for the story, they said that the Raptors are built to defend the Warriors given their mobile bigs and gaggle. That's a word they used in the article. I wouldn't use that word personally, but I guess it gets the point across. Gaggle of tough-minded guards. And, you know, you just listed, you know, those players right there with Ibaka and Van Vliet and, you know, DeLon Wright. You know, all those guys, they're not afraid to get their hands dirty. You know, they know their roles, and they're going to come in and do whatever's necessary, whether it be offense, defense, playmaking, to get the job done. And that bodes well for their overall chances. And it seems like you've painted a picture here of a Raptors team that has a high ceiling. You know, if everybody's healthy, everybody's on the same page, they can make the NBA Finals. But if somebody's not 100%, if somebody is, you know, struggling through injuries like Kyle Lowry, something like that, which I guess, you know, they have more injury issues than Milwaukee, that presents a lower ceiling for them. So they can, you know, lose potentially in the second round, you know, or something like that. Would that be a good way to look at the Raptors situation here?
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. I think one thing that we should mention is both these teams, their floors are very high because of their talent.
Sure. Yeah.
So like when we're talking about high ceiling, low floor, it is relative to being one of the best teams in the league.
Very true.
I agree with that said that the Raptors, because of how much they need each player to be there and be healthy, that I could see them potentially struggling a little bit if they have an injury to a key player in the playoffs. Like when DeLon Wright was out, they struggled a little bit. When Van Vliet wasn't shooting like himself, wasn't playing like himself, they struggled a little bit. So I do think they really need to all be there, all be healthy at the right time. And obviously that's true for each team. But I think for them especially, it's something that shows up when they're struggling.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. And I'll go back to Kyle Lowry for a second because I'm looking at his contract situation for Toronto. And this is where, you know, he has a very, I guess his situation relative to Toronto is much better than what Houston is facing with Chris Paul. You know, Chris Paul is signed for quite a while, you know, until he's, you know, 36, 37. You know, but Kyle Lowry only has one more year in his contract after this one. So if he does struggle through more injuries, if this is not just an isolated incident, if it does continue, you know, they're not on the hook for, you know, four more years of a huge salary here. They can get off in about two seasons. And it's funny because, you know, he has these injuries, he's missing games, and, you know, there's a lot on the line. You know, he actually has a lot of incentives in his contract, believe it or not. You know, there's a $200K incentive for making the All-Star team, making the All-NBA or All-Defensive team, making the Conference Finals or NBA Finals, and also a championship. So, I mean, if he fulfilled all those goals, which is pretty unlikely at this point, you know, that's an extra $800K, which is pretty interesting. Just wanted to point that out in his contract here. But overall, I mean, Toronto has a lot to work with. You know, even if things don't work out quite the way they want to this season, I think it's doubtful that Kawhi moves on. I mean, if they can at least get to the second round, maybe the Conference Finals, you know, knocking the door at the finals, it would be hard to see a situation where Kawhi wants to leave. You know, I've heard about the Clippers. You know, I've heard about some other teams, but I don't see it right now. I think it's very likely that he sticks around, you know, as long as the Toronto doesn't completely flame out sometime between now and, you know, April, May.
Yeah, I mean, I am a brokenhearted Spurs fan, so I'm probably a little bit less believing in Kawhi's loyalty than most. But I mean, I do think if they make the conference finals or the finals, or they have a good showing in the playoffs and like something bad, they have some bad luck and they like played well, but it just didn't work out. I think if it's a situation like that where they clearly are the best team he could possibly be at, then it'll be much harder to see him walking away. But if they struggle at all, I think the Clippers stuff is real. And I could see him being willing to walk away. And even if he does walk away, I still think the trade for him in terms of process and is a good one for the Raptors that they should have made 10 times out of 10.
Oh, for sure.
Getting Danny Green along with it has been very much needed. Danny Green has had a resurgent year, as I've said, and he's really playing the two-way wing, more of a 1-2 wing, but wing defender role that they really needed this year, especially with OG not really taking that big of a step forward compared to, you know, what was expected. So I think if I had to guess now, I'd probably put it up to like a coin toss if he stays or not. If they do well in the playoffs, it's probably a little higher than that. But I think either way, really good plan to trade for him, see how it works out. And if he leaves, as you said, Kyle Lowry's contract and the way they've structured pretty much all of their contracts are very convenient for instantly being in a rebuild. There's not going to be any lingering years where they're, you know, kind of between having a contending team and having a bunch of young players. It'll just be whatever it is. I think the 2020, 2021 season, it'll just, they'll already be in a rebuild if they have to. Right. So it's all structured very well for whatever comes.
That's that's the one of the key traits of a great front office. There is just remaining versatile and not locking yourself into one path. Sometimes you do. Sometimes you just have to go all in. But if you can kind of straddle that line, between just dumping a bunch of money into your players and staying flexible. The Raptors have done a fantastic job with that. So you got to give them. Give them props for just kind of maximizing values in all their contracts that they've handed out so far. It's very, very good on that front. One team that might not be as flexible going forward, though, is Boston. They might not have as much money to go around if things remain the way they are. So we're looking at the opposite side of the coin now. We're looking at a team that, has a high potential here if things click. But to this point, they haven't quite gotten there. I checked out the game last night where they went against Miami, and they struggled. They only scored 99 points that game. They were a little bit stagnant. It was hard to get things going, and you got to credit Miami for that great defense. But they are having issues. And one thing that stood out to me about their stats here is their expected win-loss record, which is 29-11. And I believe that's four more wins than they actually have. So somewhere along the way, I think it's probably their point differential or something like that. It's kind of skewed their numbers a little bit. The record is maybe not indicative of the team they are. So obviously they have another gear to go to, another level to reach. But at this point, it's just a matter of whether they can find the right lineup combinations. That's the hardest part. There's so much talent there. It's hard to figure out who to play when, and guys are still trying to figure out their role. So it's a good problem to have, but it is a struggle nonetheless, and one they need to figure out before the playoffs, most definitely.
Yeah, for sure. Like, statistically, if you look at luck-adjusted net rating, they're second in the league. And if you look at, like, Basketball Reference's opponent-adjusted net rating, they're third in the league. So on paper and statistically, with their point margin against who they've played based off their schedule, they're a good team. They're a really good team. And as you said, there's a lot of players on this team who are very talented players, especially on the wings. They have 3-4 guys who can really step in, and on different teams, you could actually see them playing crunch time minutes on playoff teams. Yeah. So it is definitely a balance between finding which guys best fit together. And one thing that's made it a little bit more difficult is they're reintegrating Gordon Hayward, who, while he's looked better, still is clearly not entirely back, doesn't entirely have his lift back, which is a normal thing to see after such a long injury. And we'll have to see in 2 months how he's looking, as opposed to right now, just because he could be a totally different player in terms of his impact at that point. Mm-hmm. A similar vein, Jaylen Brown has had a hand injury that he's been playing through, and that's limited his impact, and he's really struggled because of that. And while he is playing through that, that is something that in also a month, 2 months, he might look much more like the player he was last year than this year. So this team has been very good. They've struggled a little in close games, which is part of why their point margin is much better than their actual win-loss record. There's the talent there to be a better team than what they're showing right now, even with being such a strong team statistically.
Definitely.
So I consider them, they're kind of in the Raptors-Bucks realm of, high upside, low floor team. I think their floor is probably a little lower if they can't entirely figure it out. They're maybe a conference finals team at best. But if they get everyone back, they get everyone healthy, then, they can really take that next step, because wings are the most valuable thing in the league right now, and they have as many good wings as any team in the league, if not more, which is just so valuable. And I mean, they have Marcus Smart. He's every position. So
yeah, that's a good point. I'm glad you brought up the hand injury with Jaylen Brown, because I actually wasn't aware of that until you mentioned it. You know, I was wondering why his numbers are so down, specifically shooting numbers, with his three-point percentage being down almost 10 points. I mean, it was almost 40% last year, and he's down to just under 30% now. You know, that would explain it, at least, you know, somewhat of why he's shooting so much worse. You know, hand injuries. Do you know, is his shooting hand that he's having a problem with right now?
I want to say yes, but I'm not entirely sure, so I'll say maybe.
Okay, that would be a good explanation then of why he's struggling. I think, you know, either way, it's a hamper on your shooting form. It's going to cause some pain and maybe alter your shot a little bit. But with Jaylen Brown and Terry Rozier, it's an interesting situation they have here. You know, Jaylen Brown, you know, pretty soon, you know, you're going to come up to restricted free agency with him, and, you know, they're going to have a decision to make on that front. And then Terry Rozier is going to be a free agent as well. And those are two players that have underachieved so far this season, at least compared to what we've seen in the past. Last season's playoff run is a good example. So an interesting question here, I think, to present would be, you know, do they, maybe at least with Rozier, I mean, I was thinking about, you know, possibly, you know, kind of see what the trade market is for him, see what things are looking like. You know, because I was thinking, you know, when it gets to the summertime and they're trying to make all these decisions here, I don't know if they're going to want to bring back Terry Rozier. You know, I'm thinking that somebody is going to offer him a decent amount of money. And with Boston's cap sheet the way it is, you know, they're one of the highest payrolls in the league. It's going to be hard to keep him around. So, you know, should they at least kind of make some calls to see what things are looking like on the trade market? I'm sure his value is not as high as it was before, but I mean, it hurts to lose a guy for nothing, no matter who it is or what role they play, you know?
Yeah, I mean, if I were them, I probably would have looked to trade him over the summer, because he was coming off such a hot playoff run. His value, like, it's not going to get better than performing well in the playoffs.
Right.
And this year, he has kind of regressed back to the player he was outside of those 3-4 weeks of play. So I think it'll be harder to trade him now. I would guess there's still teams who want a starter, quote-unquote, upside point guard. So I think there's still a market out there for him, and they should explore it to its fullest, just because, as you said, he's probably going to get paid way more than they want to pay him, especially with how good Marcus Smart has been in this kind of shooting guard, also backup point guard role.
Yeah.
So I would try and trade him. I would see if there's good offers out there. If you have to, if you can get anything back for him, I would probably do it, just because I don't ultimately see him mattering that much in how they play these upcoming playoffs. So they're not going to pay him probably because of Brown and Tatum coming up, who they're going to have to up on, and Kyrie Irving.
Yeah,
they have to figure out how much they're going to pay him if he wants to stay. So I would move him. I would get any assets you can back, maybe try and get another third-string point guard back with, like, a second-round pick or something, or, like, a good second-round pick. But, I mean, I definitely would have moved off from him in the summer when his value was at its highest.
Yeah, that definitely would have been the route to go down if you're looking to get off his contract. You know, we're going to have to keep an eye on them, though, the Celtics overall, just because, you know, they're as good as any team if they can get things going. But, you know, they have the lowest, well, I shouldn't say lowest ceiling here, but they might have the highest ceiling, actually, if they can get things going the way they want to, as far as fit and everything. But that's the key issue for them. But, I mean, even if they don't get it all the way together this season, it should be fine. You know, they will be fine just because of the talent they have. And Gordon Hayward, you know, once he gets another year under his belt, removed from that injury, he'll be even better. So I wouldn't worry about them too much in the long term. Let's switch conferences here real quick and see what's going on over there, because it's a dogfight. as always. So OKC is a good team to take a look at just because of, you know, the recent performance here. Man, they had a great, like, thrilling game last night against San Antonio here.
And so fun.
It was. I mean, double overtime, you know, 140-plus points scored. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that. You know, so not really going to take a look at that game specifically too much, but I do want to kind of take a look at their overall profile and, you know, can they really make a run here? Because they're first in defensive rating. They can clamp down on pretty much any team. You know, their switchability, their length, their athleticism is just an amazing combo there. It kind of reminds me of Toronto a little bit in terms of defensive ability. You know, they excel on the boards. They force a lot of turnovers, get deflections. You know, so that's all well and good. But their shooting is a big question mark. So they got to look at the trade market. There's not a lot of options. They could entertain J.R. Smith or someone like that. You know, but outside of Alex Abrines, who's been hurt, Patrick Patterson, maybe if he can get out of the slump. You know, Ferguson, too. Ferguson nailed 7 threes last night, so that's encouraging. But they have some things to figure out as far as shooting and spacing the floor. And then Westbrook, of course. Westbrook can't hit the broadside of a barn right now, which doesn't help their cause. So a lot of questions, a lot of intriguing, impressive results. But I just want to see how Westbrook turns out, because if he can't get the shot down, it's going to be a long play. It's going to be some long games in store for the Thunder if he keeps on, you know, putting up these wayward shots out there.
Yeah, and one thing that really stood out to me last night watching the game is a lot of Westbrook's three-point attempts just aren't even close.
Yeah.
Like, he's hitting...
It's a great point.
Places I would hit playing pickup games, which is not what you want to do.
No.
So, I mean, he's never been a great three-point shooter. He's been below average, but at least it was, like, respectable, like, well-ish, like 32-33%.
Yeah.
He's 10% below that. Like, it's really bad. Awful. He's not taking fewer attempts per game to, you know, try and focus on what he's doing well right now. He's just shooting right on through it.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, in some ways is good that he's not losing confidence in himself, but it isn't working at the same time. So you sort of have to start thinking if someone maybe needs to talk to him about just only taking two a game or like just three, because right now he's around five, which is way too many for someone who's going to shoot 23% from three-point range, which, I mean, even if you expect him to get a little better from here, it's still just real bad. One thing that I do like about this team is, despite Westbrook missing so many shots, he really has embraced, and this isn't the first year he's done that, but he really has embraced his ability to pass. He's a really fun, dynamic passer because of how athletic he is. He's able to get himself into all of these positions to make passes that other point guards can't.
Yes.
And it really shows. Last night, obviously, great example because he had a career high. But he knows his teammates well. He knows where they like to get the ball. And while he sometimes doesn't get it exactly into the shooting pocket because of, you know, how fast he's moving or how high he's jumped in a different direction, he's getting his teammates the ball in locations they like to shoot from or dunk from, or where they're able to then create into a secondary creation opportunity off the dribble with the defense already shifting. So he's still doing good things for this team, especially with his passing and actually, I think on the defensive end too this year, he's been better than before. But the shooting on the league's worst three-point shooting team, at least they were going into last night, I'm not sure where they are anymore, it's bad. Like, if you just take away those shooting attempts and take them, turn them into drives or something like that, because he's still shooting the same percent as ever as two-point attempts.
Yep.
I think that could do good things to help this team, because there's so many games Westbrook has had this year where he's like 6 of 20 for 19 points.
Yeesh.
And while he gets the assists and rebounds and is playing better defense to sort of help make up for that, that can really sink a team in the playoffs, no matter how good their defense is.
No question. I mean, we slammed him so much for his three-point percentage, But, I mean, that's not even the whole story. I mean, you look at his free throw percentage, it's awful too. I mean, he's shooting.
Really strange.
I know it's crazy that, you know, he went from, you know, 85%, you know, like 2 years ago to, you know, barely above 60, and he's a career 80% shooter. So, I mean, I don't think, I'm trying to recall a player that took this much of a plunge in such a short time. I can't think of an example here, but one explanation that was presented, I think it was in a recent broadcast, was his free throw routine has been interrupted. So I guess they're cracking down on players going all the way to half court in between their free throws. And that's threw off his rhythm a little bit, which I guess I could see, you know, if he dropped 5% or something like that, you know, I understand, you know, NBA players are creatures of habit and they love having, you know, routines, consistent routines. It really helps with their performance. But still, I mean, 62%, you know, I just, it's so weird to see it. And it's a continuing trend from last year because, you know, he went from 84.5% 2 years ago to 73. Now he's at 62. So, I mean, this is the second year in a row his free throw percentage has dropped by 11 percentage points. And that's a lot. I mean, 11 points is, you know, the difference between being a great shooter and just barely average. So really troubling to see that. But yeah, going back to the assist totals, I am encouraged to see that. I think there was one possession last night towards the end of the game where he had an open three and he made a skip pass over to the right wing where I think Terrence Ferguson was. And Terrence Ferguson knocked down a three. So, you know, when he does that, when he actually pauses a second and says, wait, I am shooting 22% from three. Maybe I should pass this off to Ferguson, who was, at the time, I think he was 5 of 6 or something like that. Maybe that's a better shot. When he's doing that and he's completely locked into what needs to be done, not just looking for his own shot, it makes things so much, flow so much better. So that's encouraging to see. I did like his playmaking last night for the most part. But it is a struggle, so we'll have to see, you know, how that works. And then Roberson hasn't even been playing, so, I mean, he's not going to help the three-point percentage at all. So, yeah, I don't know.
With Roberson, I am curious to see how they integrate him back into the lineup because he hasn't played, and I think it'll have been over a year whenever he comes back.
Yeah.
And the team has still been really good on defense without him. Mm-hmm. So I'm interested to see how much playing time they give him, sort of what his impact is on is the defense going to be better. If it's not, is it worth just going with Grant instead of him just to give some three-point shooting threat at a sort of 3-4 type position? It's going to be tough for Roberson to get back into the rotation this season, which is really unfortunate because Roberson last year was having a hell of a season as a defensive wing.
Absolutely.
And I think one more thing that's worth mentioning before we move on to the next team is just that Paul George, man, he's having a crazy good year.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, I never thought Paul George could have this good a year. To me, he was always, like, an 8-12, top 8-12 type player, where he was really good, but you couldn't really have him as your best player on the team. Mm-hmm. And this year, I mean, he's not running the offense. It's still Westbrook, but he is the offensive focal point despite not being the one doing most of the ball handling responsibilities. And he's having a crazy good year. Like, defensive player of the year, I wouldn't put him, like, in the top three for voting, but he certainly deserves mention when that comes up as one of the top wing defenders. He's having a crazy good year offensively. It's just worth mentioning how far Paul George has come, especially with, you know, the injuries that he's faced throughout his career to get back to this point and become even better than people thought. It's impressive. It's really impressive.
Yeah, I love what he's done after last year's playoff performance. It's almost like he looked himself in the mirror after that performance against the Jazz, you know, where Joe Ingles just bottled him up. And, you know, he didn't look like himself. So he came back this season on a mission to prove to people, you know, he's still this elite player. He can be even better than what we've seen in Indiana. And he's done that so far in less minutes, I might add. You know, he's playing less minutes than he did last year, about almost a minute less a game. So, I mean, kudos to Paul George for making the most of his opportunities and getting back on track as far as being efficient and being just super aggressive as the, you know, focal point of the Thunder offense. Westbrook is, you know, having some slight issues there. So one more team here that we're going to look at as far as, you know, a contender possibly is Denver. They're a very interesting team. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on, you know, what they can do in the playoffs, because I've gone actually back and forth a few times on what Denver can do in the postseason. Initially, I was low on them. You know, I wasn't sure how the lack of experience would translate. You know, I wasn't sure if, you know, these guys are ready. Jamal is ready. Gary is ready for the bright lights and, you know, being schemed against night in and night out by the same team. I wasn't quite sure, but then I took a second look and I love their chemistry. I love Jokic's playmaking. You know, I love their shooting. I mean, even Hernan Gomez, you know, Morris and Beasley. I mean, they're all shooting great from three. So it's not like it's just Gary Harris and Jamal hitting all the threes for them. But, I mean, they've survived injuries. They've beaten the teams they're supposed to beat. They've taken care of whole court. They've done everything an elite team is supposed to do in the face of overwhelming injuries to just about every key player they have outside of Jokic. So it's gotten me a little more encouraged by what they could do in the playoffs. So how far do you think this team can go? Is this a mirage, or is this something sustainable here?
I mean, I think it's sustainable. I for sure think it's sustainable. Their ecosystem, the way they play around Jokic, is definitely one that works, at least for the rest of the regular season. I don't see them having any drop-offs as everyone comes back. I saw a graph recently that was like they're by far the most injured team in terms of like games lost to injury. Mm-hmm. Like no one else is really even close. And to be where they are as one of the top teams in the West, considering that, is very, very impressive. I think when it comes to the playoffs, I'm taking a little bit more of a wait-and-see approach. I mean, I think they'll be a good team in the playoffs. I expect them to win a series at least and definitely be competitive in whatever their second-round series is. But teams, I think Nikola Jokic is underrated as a defender, but he is slow of foot. There are definitely ways teams will attack him in the playoffs, and they're going to have to be scheming with Paul Millsap and some of their other wing defenders to help make up for that, which – you know, could lead to other holes being opened on perimeter defense. So I'm a little wary of their, you know, top end ceiling being like finals team. But I mean, if they win the second round and make it to the conference finals, I wouldn't be shocked. I'd be pleasantly surprised, but not shocked. Mm-hmm. So they're a very good team. They're built the right way around Jokic. They have the good defensive players where if they're cohesive and healthy at the same time, it'll work out for them, and they'll do a really good job and probably surprise some teams in the playoffs. But I ultimately don't see them this year yet being a real title contender in the sense of, like, I would give them more than, like, 3-4% chance of, like, winning the finals. So I think next year going forward, most of their guys are young. They'll have to replace Paul Millsap, but, you know, that's theoretically possible as Millsap has been aging a little bit. And there will be avenues of replicating what he gives you. So I think next year or the year after that is their year. This year they're just a really, really good team, going to get home court, going to win a series or two, going to be fun as hell in the playoffs, but probably aren't going to actually win this season.
Yeah, that's a fair assessment. I think one element that does help their odds is, you know, the emergence of these bench players. Going into this season, you know, I don't think any of us expected Monte Morris or Malik Beasley to really have an impact like this. We expected them to get spot minutes here. I mean, they're good players, but you know, they've really taken advantage of their opportunities. I think Morris is shooting 43% from outside. Hernan Gomez at 41%, and then Beasley at 39%. So, I mean, they're getting their shots up, and they're making the most of it. They're being efficient here. You know, they're keeping the defense honest. And, you know, Monte Morris is such a reliable guy. He's not going to, you know, turn the ball over a ton of times. He's going to give you a realistic chance to win. He's going to keep your team in it. You know, even if, you know, the starters are out of the game, you know, going to do the make the right plays and all that. So, you know, love their role, guys. You know, love what they've been able to do so far. But I would second that thought that their flaws are going to keep them out of the absolute best case scenario, you know, going to conference finals onward. But I do like, you know, there are chances of, you know, definitely getting out into round one and being competitive after that. So a lot to look forward to. And just like the Celtics, they're going to be in a round a while. You know, they have nothing to fear if don't go exactly the way they want them to. So they'll be fine. Let's look at one more team here. And then, you know, we'll get into a little bit of this all-star vote, because that's been a hot topic lately. So I'll do something a little bit different here. I'll let you take the pick, Jacob. Houston or Philadelphia? Which team do you think is, you know, kind of causing more of a debate in your head of whether how far they can really go?
Let's do Philadelphia, just because they have so many inter-team turmoil stories going on right now.
Good idea. So, I mean, they're almost top 10 in offensive and defensive rating. I think they're just outside of both of those stats there, despite the issues they have. You know, you mentioned they have some turmoil going on. Jimmy Butler is outspoken as ever. He's going to make his voice known, as we know very well. And then, of course, Ben Simmons is just making waves here with his lack of shooting. So it's funny to see, you know, Ben Simmons kind of, you know, tease us with the shot. You know, he'll hit you with a fadeaway mid-range, you know, once or twice a game. He'll warm up and shoot threes, but he still won't take any threes in the game whatsoever. So it creates some questions on how effective he can be in the playoffs, you know, especially after last year where he was shut down a pretty good amount. But overall, Philly as a team is intriguing. I've just been a little bit, you know, I'm a little bit more doubtful on their kind of playoff odds now as we go through the season. Jimmy has had a hard time really finding his niche in that team. You know, they lack a little bit of depth and shooting, which is, you know, it's tough to overcome. And, you know, they're just going to face so many balanced, just cohesive teams in the playoffs. I just don't know how far they can go. I would say round one, they'll be fine. I think round two is going to be where they meet their match. You know, it's going to be Boston. It's going to be Toronto. And at that point, you know, they're going to get exploited for the lack of shooting unless they find a guy in the free agent market, which is going to be tough. And then Ben Simmons, of course. You know, I love Ben. You know, we know how good of a playmaker he is and rebounder and all that, but it's hard. It's hard to have a primary playmaker, you know, be a non-shooter, unless you're Giannis. But Giannis has the personnel to take advantage, as we talked about earlier. So don't know what they'll be able to do with those flaws that they have.
Yeah, I think one thing I want to hit on that you mentioned is that Ben Simmons and Giannis aren't the same guy. Like, there's a lot of, oh, well, Ben Simmons can be effective if he just plays like Giannis. And, I mean, Giannis's nickname is the Greek Freak for a reason. If you look at him physically, his profile is pretty different than Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons is a few inches shorter, doesn't have the wingspan. They're probably pretty even in terms of athleticism. But when you take away some of the ridiculous size that Giannis has, it makes it a little bit harder to do the same things that Giannis did and does. And Simmons is a better passer, sure, but he's not as good at just barreling through people and making crazy Euro steps around guys and reaching from like the free throw line and dunking. So it's a little bit hard to just say, make Ben Simmons play like Giannis, it'll work out great. And I think one thing that complicates that, or two things that complicate that, are Joel Embiid and Jimmy Butler. because Giannis, while he plays with other good players, they're not real star level players. Like Chris Middleton is a great player, and he can do a lot of good things for you, but he's not in that top 20 conversation of players in the league.
Yeah.
Whereas Jimmy Butler and Joel Embiid both are. So those guys need the ball in their hand. Joel Embiid needs his post-ups. Jimmy Butler loves – he recently apparently was complaining about not getting enough ball handling responsibilities or ball handling plays called for him. It's either, he wants some more ISOs or he wants to run some more pick and rolls. So while Ben Simmons, you can conceptually say, build it like Giannis, the talent around Ben Simmons is also very different than the talent around Giannis. So that's not just something you can snap your fingers and do this season. And one other thing that sort of makes that harder is the shooting around Giannis, which is what we talked about pretty much all of the time we were talking about the Bucks, is just on a different level than the 76ers. 76ers have, a few guys who can shoot. They have J.J. Redick, who's like an all-time shooter. Landry Shamet's done a really good job this year. Jimmy himself is a pretty good shooter. Wilson Chandler can shoot decently. But they don't really have four guys they can put on the court around Ben Simmons at any one time who are willing to, kind of space the floor, get those secondary creation opportunities where the Bucks do. So it's just not an apples-to-oranges comparison for just play Ben Simmons like Giannis. It just wouldn't work structurally that way because of the talent around them.
Yeah, they are very different players. I hope it didn't come across as I was trying to compare them.
No.
More just like situations just around them, just as far as what they're working with. Just that they have a similar weakness, I guess, is just the main issue there. But yeah, it's a very different situations. Giannis has the tools to compensate for that lack of shooting, while Ben, a little bit harder to make that work. I did want to get into some free agents here, but obviously that's not going to happen this time around as the time's running a little bit short. So let's look at this fan vote here for the All-Star weekend coming up. So the All-Star Second Returns came back recently. And this is great because, for you listeners out there, Jacob made a great point the other day on Twitter coming off these returns. We all want to see Dwayne Wade and Luka and Dirk and Vince Carter. It would be great to see these guys in the All-Star game, but the reality is there's only 12 spots. So if you give one of those 12 spots to a legend who, obviously hasn't deserved it this season, it costs guys that may not have a chance to get it again. Guys that might only have one shot. So we really got to think about who we're voting for here because it is important. And even though the fan vote has gone down to 50%, it's still a large portion of that. So, Luka and Rose, they're great players. They've had great seasons. I love watching these guys play. But let's not get to the point where Rose has more votes than James Harden. That's a little bit kind of whack, if we're speaking kind of plainly here about how the fan vote is going. And I think the main thing is just who's voting. A lot of guys that are voting are just voting for their favorite player or who they watch the most or something like that. But, Jacob, at least it's not 100% anymore because, let's not forget what happened a few years ago where Zaza almost made it, So we dodged a bullet then, and, I'm hopeful that we'll dodge a bullet again this time around.
Yeah, I'm kind of torn on the All-Star game because it's a game for the fans. It's a way of, showcasing the players that fans most want to see in this sort of fun, crazy environment where only the last 6 minutes are ever really taken seriously. So I get fans voting for their favorite players even if they're not having currently deserving years. Dwayne Wade is an all-time great player. If fans want to vote for him to watch him in his last season in the All-Star game, I get it. But at the same time, All-Star appearances is something used when talking about a player's legacy.
Yes.
Like
absolutely.
It can't both matter and not matter at the same time, which is why I find myself kind of torn. I don't want to not let fans see who they want to see in the All-Star game because it's a meaningless game that on the court doesn't matter. But off the court, when we're talking about a player's career, one of those first things they say, how many All-Star games they made, how many All-NBA teams they made. Those are always the first two criteria when considering the legacy of a player. And so it's tough for me to entirely say it's a meaningless game because it's not. Mm-hmm. But it is. And that's where it's like, it's a weird juxtaposition of being meaningless in the moment and meaningful in terms of like reflection on players' careers and that sort of thing. So I'm torn on it. I like that the fans no longer have 100% of the vote. I like that players get to vote. I like that coaches, or not coaches, I'm sorry. I like that journalists get larger percents of the vote. Mm-hmm. But it's still an imperfect system. I don't think there is a way of making the All-Star game just a fun game because it is something so ingrained in, you know, Hall of Fame voters' consciousness for what matters for making the Hall of Fame. And when talking about players, it is something that matters, even if the actual games don't matter. It's just like the raw count matters. I'm not sure how to handle the All-Star game voting, and sort of the way I take it is just to throw out my hands and say, if people want to watch Dwayne Wade go for it one last time, all for it. I'm not going to, you know, really consider All-Star appearances as something meaningful in terms of if players had a good career or not.
So would a potential solution be to expand the rosters? I know that's something that I've talked about with my friends on several occasions when we're looking at the rosters. You know, NBA rosters these days, if you include two-way contracts, I mean, they go up to 16 players. So I don't think it would be unreasonable to increase the roster by one or two for the All-Star game. I mean, that helps create extra spots. So if you want to see a legend or two play, that's great. They have a spot while still maintaining enough room for, you know, Tobias Harris to make the game, you know, or Chris Middleton or someone like that, that is kind of on the edge, but you don't want to see them miss out on their only shot just because Dirk or Vince is going to get another appearance. So, you know, there's that. And then, you know, maybe we take away the fans' ability to vote overall for the players. Maybe they only vote for the captains. I mean, because, you know, the whole idea of the captains was to make the game more competitive and make it more fun to watch for the fans. So, you know, maybe we give them a different option. So maybe they're not in charge of who makes the game, but maybe rather who's in charge once the rosters are set. So maybe it wouldn't have as big of an impact on legacy. You know, because captains, it really just is like a, you know, it's just something about popularity and just, you know, just picking teams like in a pick a basketball game. So the stakes are lower in that scenario. So I feel like that would be a good way to kind of meet in the middle and to kind of give the fans what they want, which is to be a part of the game, which is what the NBA wants, while also giving, you know, those borderline All-Stars a chance to, you know, play on one of the biggest stages in the game. You know, there's just a few ideas that I kind of thought of kind of in the process of getting ready for this. Something to think about.
One idea that I have that I think could work is keep the fan voting, but just make it, you know, the top 8 front court players from the West and top 8 guards from the West go into like a pool, or like the top 20 overall vote getters from each conference go into a pool of players, and those players get voted on by both media and the other players in the game, and whoever they vote for are the ones who make the team. So that way, like, the fans still get to vote, but there is more of a checks and balances system in place than just averaging a bunch of different parties' votes together, yeah. Which I personally don't think is a very good way of ranking things.
Mm-hmm. That's a great idea, too. You know, because if you go on NBA.com and you place your vote, it's completely open. You know, you have, I mean, if you want, you can vote for Alex Sabrinas to be in the All-Star game. So, mm-hmm. I mean, maybe we limit that down to, you know, as you said, just a certain amount of players from each conference. And then that kind of reduces, I don't know if this is a good term, margin of error. I don't know if that's a good way to kind of look at it. But, you know, instead of taking everybody, so players that are not deserving, throwing them in with players that are deserving, we can have a pool of just all the players that, you know, are clearly having a deserving season. And we just kind of pick from that selection. So that's a great idea, too. I know that would be great if the NBA was listening to this podcast, because I think between the two of us, we've come up with some pretty good alternatives to kind of what they're running out now.
For sure.
So that's going to be fun to see here. So before we wrap up, Jacob, out of these legends of the game, Dirk, Vince, and, you know, Dwayne Wade, these guys are coming to the end. Who, if you had to vote for one of those guys to get in, who would you want to see most get one last run in the All-Star game before they kind of hang it up?
Dirk, pretty easily Dirk. For me, just because I think he's had the best career and he's still, I feel like, the most underappreciated and the larger basketball consciousness out of those guys. And yeah. I also think he would have the most fun with it by trying to dunk once and, like, throwing out his back. So
that would be great to see.
That would be the way I would go for it. But, I mean, if any of them make it, I will celebrate them making it, and I will pretend it never happened when considering them as players.
That is a great strategy, man. You know, if I had to pick a guy, I mean, it's Dwayne Wade for me. You know, I've been a Heat fan for, you know, quite a while, and Dwayne Wade was kind of the big reason for me getting on board with the team. So, you know, it would be great to see him get one more last ride at But, you know, of course, Dirk would be great to see. I mean, this guy is top five. He's top five in scoring all time, which no one saw that coming, you know, as he got into the league and got started. So Dirk is fantastic. It's a shame to see him barely be able to run out there. That kind of hurts me every time he plays. You know, I think this is going to be it for him because he's really laboring. It's a tough yeah. life for him. But, man, I appreciate you coming on the podcast. As always, you know, this is your second appearance, and, you know, I think we can consider you a veteran at this point, so, you know, love having you on. That's some great ideas there, especially about the All-Star game, some things I hadn't thought of before, so thanks for taking the time, and, you know, you're welcome on, you know, anytime, of course, to kind of give your thoughts.
I love it. This was a great time. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And listeners, be sure to keep it locked here at BCB. More articles coming your way on bcbasketball.info, you know, BC Basketball 2, Twitter, Instagram, sneak peeks on the next podcast. You know, I dropped some thoughts about some, you know, free agents, some salary situations over on the Twitter page, so make sure to check that out. And if you enjoyed the podcast, give it a share, give it a subscribe, maybe leave a review so you can let others know what you think of the program. So thanks for tuning in, everybody. You know, we're breaking it down $1 at a time, you know, over here at the podcast and the website. Enjoy the rest of the season. It's going to be a fun ride, and we'll be back real soon to continue to break it all down for you.